everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Art O'Cal here with you every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well, the NHL on ESPN YouTube. It is our Tuesday edition, Wish, so that means we gotta get to our winners and losers from a fun-filled weekend in the NHL. Also a sun-filled weekend if you're Jonas Korpisalo. He got the solar eclipse early on his face during a game.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate the Washington Capitals trying to use a giant magnifying glass to blind goalies or whatever. But, you know, winner for me, obviously, over the weekend is the Detroit Red Wings. Welcome back to relevance, my friends. The win over the Buffalo Sabres over the weekend means that the Red Wings control their own fate for the playoffs, which is a very exciting deal. Again, like the absence from the playoffs for Detroit makes you want to root for this team to get in. Who knows how long they'd last, but they have definitely gotten the job done lately. Alex Lyon doing a great job in keeping them in games. And it looks like the Red Wings have at least a chance to seal their own fate, which is all you can ask for at this time of the season. I also want to give a shout out to the Islanders. My God, let's give all the love we can to the Islanders fans, because Lord knows they always think that we don't. They were winless in six back in March, Arda, and I thought they were cooked. I thought they were cooked. But after that, they won six of eight games. They are getting some outstanding goaltending. I looked into the numbers. I'm like, okay, why are the goals against a little bit lower than they've been in the previous weeks? It's not because of them getting their act together at 5-on-5 necessarily. It's because they have the fifth best save percentage in the NHL over their last eight games. So again, when the rest of the Eastern Conference bubble is, you know, treading water or falling into quicksand in the case of some teams, the Islanders managed to pull themselves up after a losing streak, find their game again, and you know, play well enough to inhabit a playoff spot this late in the season. So kudos to the Red Wings, kudos to the Islanders, kudos to the Penguins. Hey, all these teams are at least making things interesting, while other teams like my Devils have decided to take an early vacation.
Yes, absolutely. And the Eastern Conference is ridiculous. It is unserious at times, is the way I would put it, in terms of these teams wanting those spots, because it's like a hot potato. We'll talk about that and more with Rob Rossi of The Athletic coming up a little bit later on. A loser.
Yeah, the Ottawa Senators. Speaking of the Devils, the Sens and the Devils played over the weekend. The Devils win that game. At the end of the game, Nico Hischier dumps the puck into an empty net after the buzzer goes off. And Senators captain Brady Tkachuk loses his mind. He goes over to Nico. He's like, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing, man? So, okay, so now we are the team of empty net decorum after celebrating what Ridly Greig did earlier this season against the Toronto Maple Leafs when he sent that clapper into an empty net that, of course, sparked the melee with Morgan Rielly that got Rielly suspended. But now we are the team of prim and proper rules when it comes to empty net etiquette, Arda.
Yeah, I just love the level of difference for the Ottawa Senators there, the level of petty. It's just going to go their way no matter what as they fall out of the
playoffs. Abject hypocrisy, Arda. We can't have abject hypocrisy in this league.
No, never. Absolutely not.
Rules
that never
have,
happens.
You have to mean something, you know, just because, you know, you act a certain
they
way
make
in
up
one
the
game,
rules.
You have to act a certain way every other game. We all know that.
They make up the rules, and you love to see it. It makes for fun, especially when a Tkachuk is involved. It's always fun. Winner.
Winner for me, Landon Dupont. Landon Dupont is a 14-year-old defenseman. Landon Dupont became just the second player in Western Hockey League history to be granted early exceptional player status. The league had announced on Monday. The first player that they gave that status to was a little plucky youngster named Connor Bedard, Arda.
Oh, yeah.
You may have heard of a time or two this season with the Chicago Blackhawks. Including Bedard, eight players in total have been granted exceptional player status in the Canadian Hockey League. And DuPont joins Sean Day and Aaron Ekblad as defensemen who qualified for early exceptional status. DuPont's father, Mickey, played 350 games in the AHL, had a few stints in the NHL. Landon, apparently incredibly good skater, great hockey IQ, and one to watch as he gets a really, really privileged honor in the Canadian Hockey League.
Yeah, if you're going to pick one person to keep an eye on in juniors and only one, pick the one that gets exceptional status. That rarely ever happens, as you mentioned. Loser.
Loser is the Walter Cup. Now, what is the Walter Cup, Arda? The Walter Cup is the championship at the end of the season for our friends in the PWHL, who, again, do things extraordinarily well, have had a great inaugural season, but a couple quibbles here and there. This is a quibble. The Walter Cup is named after the PWHL's primary financial backer, Los Angeles owner Mark Walter, and his family, the league said last week. I was hoping maybe it was named after Wayne Gretzky's father. Not the case, but
I think lot of people thought that.
Yeah,
when
heard it, there are two Walters that are synonymous with hockey. One is Walter Gretzky, and the other one obviously is Big Walt Kachuk. Right? Yes. Those are the Walters we know. But this is Mark Walter, and that's kind of the issue. Like the NWHL and the PHF. Okay, remember what their trophy was at the end of the season? Arda?
Yes, it was the Isabel Cup, named after I believe, the daughter of Lord Stanley.
That is correct. Named after Lady Isabel Gathorne Hardy, who was the daughter of Lord Stanley and one of the first women known to play the game of ice hockey. So again, I know that we didn't import the Riveters logo. I know we didn't import the names of the teams and the colors and the whole thing. I get why that the PWHL wanted to have a clean break from what had come before them. The Isabel Cup is a dope name. It's a dope concept, and it is so much better than naming your championship trophy after the money man behind your league.
Okay, fine. I hear you on the name of the cup. I like the look of the Walter Cup more than the Isabel Cup. Now, I also want to say this. You've said on this show, the drinkability quotient must be high for a trophy.
It has to.
To be fair, the Isabel Cup, you can drink out of it. The Walter Cup, you can also drink out of it. The only thing I will say about the Walter Cup, and maybe we'll show a picture here. Basically, it's easy to hold. It'll be easy to drink out of. The only thing I'm concerned about is there's two little, like the way that it, like, it's like basically a V with the cup in the middle, but the V sticks out higher than the edges of the bowl. So I wonder in celebration if someone will like
impale themselves.
Yeah, impale themselves with those little ends, you know, in the midst of ridiculous, debaucherous celebration.
Yeah, you don't want sharp edges and copious amounts of champagne in the same equation is what you don't want.
But I will say I do like the look of the trophy, so I think that's cool. Winner.
Evgeny Malkin's parents, baby. Vladimir and Natalia Malkin got emotional watching their son score against the Tampa Bay Lightning because it was the first time they had a chance to watch Gino in person in over 5 years, Arda.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. Anything parents related. I think we saw this with Devin Cooley and his mom when he won his first NHL game with the San Jose Sharks. I think it was a couple days ago, and you could see the emotion on her face and their family too. Like, yeah, like when you see stuff like this of Evgeny Malkin's parents, like parent content at any level of hockey, let alone in the NHL, is always welcome with me. So.
Not only that, but like this is a guy who scored like a billion goals, right? And it's still that kind of reaction.
It matters,
parents to see it happen in person. It's lovely. It was a lovely moment. Loser cancer. Congratulations to the St. Louis Blues and the Blues alumni for donating around $1 million to the Siteman Cancer Center and the V Foundation for Cancer Research with a charity game over the weekend that was attended by over 3,000 people and featured players like Brendan Shanahan, Pierre Turgeon, Chris Chelios, Ed Belfour, and in fact, Arda, Full House's Dave Coulier, a very famous for hockey celebrity. They raised $400,000. And then added an additional $600,000 donated by the Blues and Blues alumni. Blues alumnus Kelly Chase, who was diagnosed with acute leukemia in November, helped orchestrate the event.
Fun fact, I once interviewed, and this is when I was working at the Canadian version of the Weather Channel once upon a time, called the Weather Network, Dave Coulier and Dino Ciccarelli. Maybe the oddest weather-related interview in history.
Sure it was.
I don't know why that came to mind, but there you go. Those are your winners and losers. We didn't even talk about Cody Rhodes. How responsible of us to keep it to hockey. Two guys that are wrestling heads, keeping it hockey on a hockey podcast. Good for us, Wish. Well done. We got through a whole segment.
Yeah, but I figure that now we have Rob Rossi, one of the biggest wrestling heads in hockey journalism, coming up. We may chat about it a little bit.
Happy to have back on The Drop here on ESPN, Rob Rossi, senior writer for The Athletic. All right, Rob, listen, before we get to all the WrestleMania talk, let's get the hockey conversations out of the way first. All right. I have a very direct question. I'm curious the Pittsburgh perspective on this particular question. So Sidney Crosby having an awesome year, the Penguins battling up until the bitter end for a playoff spot. If the Penguins make the playoffs, where does that put Sidney Crosby in the Hart Trophy conversation?
Well, I can't say where it will be on my ballot because that breaks rules. But I had been arguing until it looked like they were done. So 2 weeks ago, that if the Penguins make the playoffs, that Crosby deserves to be one of the nominees. To give the audience a bit of a background here, it's, the PHWA selects the Hart Trophy nominees and we vote on five, the people that vote. And then from whoever the top three vote getters are the finalists that everybody sees. So when I say nominees, I mean in the top five. I come from it from a different place than most. We have an award that is awarded to the best player. We have awards that are voted to the best goal scorer and the best goalie and the best defenseman and even the leading point scorer. So I take it by value of player adjudged to be most valuable to his team. And maybe because I've covered Crosby so long, but certainly because I've covered this team, placing value on him for the Penguins to me is very easy. Other than Evgeny Malkin, they are not going to have a player that comes close to between 60 and 70 points. He leads the league in faceoffs taken, and has been among the leaders all year in winning percentage, including defensive zone faceoffs. People will argue he's not as good a defensive player. I say defensive metrics. So I don't trust them. Which is not to say I don't trust metrics. I just defensive metrics. I'm always like, okay, well, like what? But I think he has a real case to be one of the five players nominated.
Rossi, when we last talked to you, it was basically to give last rites on this season. I mean, like they were trading Gensel. They were out of a playoff spot. It looked like we were, I mean, most of our conversation was about like Kyle Dubas and what the next phase of this team is going to look like. And then lo and behold, the scant few weeks later, they're in position to try to make the playoffs and the percentages are looking decent like they will. What's changed? I mean, is it just that the Metro Division is so crap that the Penguins stayed alive, or has something intrinsically changed since the Gensel trade?
Yeah, well, you know, I wish that it held up in one regard. I've had many stories that were set to appear in The Athletic after the season that no longer will because they are not relevant even if they miss at this point. what's changed? excuse me, a couple of things, a few things. One, they don't have the cloud of Gensel hanging over them. And I think that was starting to weigh on people. Two, Kyle Dubas, whether through injuries to veterans or just deciding to give opportunities to some of these younger players, Mike Sullivan has had younger players to use and he's trusted using them. So, and especially with Evgeny Malkin, that and the third thing, Michael Bunting is exactly what they needed, which is not to suggest he's a better hockey player than Jake Gensel.
Right.
But he's a more dimensional hockey player than Jake Gensel. And by that, I mean, he just does different things than be a great scorer. Now, Jake's such a great scorer that evens all the other stuff out. But Bunting brings a level of physicality and with Malkin, a consistency with getting to the hard areas and also drawing contact away from Malkin, that it's really helped Malkin sort of become more of a Malkin's had a lot of bad puck luck this year in terms of he's been generating chances, but they haven't been going in. And a lot of his line mates just haven't been capitalizing on the chances Malkin's created. Bunting's done both. The bottom of the East has been a bucket of suck for months and it's, It's to the discredit of all the teams around the Penguins that they didn't bury them.
Yeah.
But it's to the Penguins' credit that when they smelled blood, they went on this heater. Yeah. You know, the other thing is Alex Nedeljkovic's been playing like, you know, Patrick Waugh or any other goalie from my past that probably young viewers don't know, but he's been sensational. And you know, hockey's not complicated. If you got a goalie stopping 93% of the shots, and then you got Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin scoring, you know, win some games.
Doing some good. Yeah, exactly.
So as we record this, as you mentioned, the bucket of suck, especially in that second wild card spot. It's been a hot potato. We've all seen this. Even the third in the Metro is now the Islanders, was the Flyers for a long time. So in your opinion, what is going to be the threshold? How many points do you think it's going to take secure a spot, and who makes out?
I think that game on the island, or on the outskirts of the island, will be for third place in the Metro.
There you
and
go.
I think the Penguins and the Islanders, as of today, would be the teams I say are getting in. Keep in mind that we are 15 days removed from the Penguins being 12 points out of the playoffs. So,
wild.
Whoever's booking this has done it masterfully. It's just been all payoff and no build.
All right. One more question for me before we get to the real stuff, which is the wrestling talk. You're a scholar of the Eastern Conference. You're a scholar of the Metro Division. If you're Danny Briere and you're Keith Jones and you're looking at what the Flyers have done down the stretch of this season, knowing that a playoff seed would have meant a nice financial bump for the franchise, and that missing the playoffs means you essentially just ruined your draft lottery odds for no reason, what is your reaction to what you're seeing down the stretch from this Flyers team if you're Flyers management?
Well, it's honestly similar to what the reaction I thought of the Penguins until about 6 days ago, which was like, what's the point of not being really bad?
Yeah.
It's a tough league to be really bad in, though, because you have to fully commit. And that's tough if you have a coach like Torts, because Torts's teams are going to usually overachieve for large portions of the season, and then they're going to have a stretch where they kind of wear out. Which does not mean I don't think he's a fantastic coach. I do. But I do think we've probably seen him get everything he could out of this group. The Flyers, of all the teams that were in this race, to me, Greg, are the one that I kind of look, even more than the Capitals, because the Capitals still have Ovi. And, you know, Ovi can heat up, and that kind of happened with the Capitals taking that surge, and but they were limited, we know. But I think all year, at least I looked at the Flyers and went, okay, when's it burst? When's that bubble burst? When's that damn break? And then at one point I was like, okay, it ain't breaking. I'd be frustrated, but I'd have patience, because I also would be like, well, the goalie we expected to be there isn't, and the team probably overachieved, but that's not a market where patience is allowed. And this will be framed in the prism of a collapse. And I do wonder, it's been a long time since the Philadelphia Flyers have been a contender in the East.
It's true. But hey, at least a championship has been won in Philadelphia recently.
Right. That card had the most playoff implications of anything, I guess.
Let me see my piece. First of all, I want to give a shout out to Megan Kelly, our producer on The Point, who correctly said that Arda gets more fired up talking about wrestling than any other topic in his job purview. And that's exactly true. So let me put this to both of you guys. So I'm watching WrestleMania Night 1. The Rock is teaming with Roman Reigns against Cody and Seth. The Rock during the match is basically threatening the referee's job, because The Rock is now a board member of TKO, the parent ownership company of WWE and UFC. So he has amazing sway now. Why didn't he do any of that sway on Night 2? Why couldn't he just go to the referee?
Because he was choke-slammed, Wish.
Give Roman the win, or else you're losing your job. Oh, and here's my other question. If there's no disqualification on Night 2 between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, then why doesn't the entire bloodline just all jump on top of each other on top of Cody so he can't kick out?
So that's what I thought would actually happen. Like, it doesn't make sense from a presentation standpoint, but why not just make it a bloodline lumberjack match? Like, here's the entire family, surround the ring before the match starts. What are you going to do? Right? Yeah. Like from a we want the bloodline to win perspective, that would have made sense, but not from a WrestleMania presentation perspective.
The only way you're getting out of this is if all of the bloodline, you know, Jimmy Uso, Sokoa, like all of them are jumping on top of Roman, who is now on top of Cody, and trying to pin him that way. The only way he's getting out of it, I guess, is if the Undertaker shows up in the ring and does his spooky dark magic powers to make them all levitate off of Cody. Like, that's the only way he's getting out of that pinfall, which I guess is plausible given what happened. But it made me mental to see how the Rock could manipulate an entire match on night one, and then on night two, he just went back to being a worker bee in the match. It was crazy. Rossi, your take.
I will point out that part of the reason I love wrestling is I don't have to find sense in what they do because I'm allowed to suspend disbelief. But allow me to say this about the way they booked it.
Yes.
The fun was knowing it was going to be ridiculous and seeing it happen and play out, right? But the reason I was happy it was Undertaker and not Steve Austin, which I know a lot of people are upset about, was Taker fits more into the storyline, which everybody that we saw in the final hour of that, or 45 minutes of that show did, except for CM Punk putting himself into it, which they're friends with Cody. I'm not taking a shot at Punk, but I mean, That was like everybody we saw. Secondly, if you got a final boss character, right? Austin wouldn't really, for the final boss character, like Austin's Austin. Taker is actually a final boss.
Yeah,
if you pay attention to WWE. I thought Rock sold Taker's entrance different than he sold anything during this angle. Because that was like, oh, no, I can't deal with this guy. And in theory, if you get chokeslammed by Undertaker in WWE, for the next 5 minutes, you're messed up.
He literally disappeared from the ring. He was sent to the netherworld.
Right. But to just say this, you would have to want to stop the match or restart it. And maybe that's not what Rock wanted to see. Maybe Rock wanted to see if Roman could win this on his own with all the help
leading into a bloodline.
That's why we need you on the show, Rossi. Speak logic.
Yeah. Because Greg, like the Eastern Conference with wrestling, the story never ends. It just keeps continuing.
We might have to take this conversation to Wishlist Patreon because we could spend like hours talking about this. Rob, senior writer of The Athletic, we really appreciate you joining us and giving us all the WrestleMania and Eastern Conference takes, man. Thanks.
And one of them is scripted. I just don't know which.
Thanks a lot to Rob Rossi for joining us here on the show. I'm a little surprised at what's next on the rundown here, not because it's not worth talking about, Wish, but because it is here on the show. Like, we're going to talk about NHL esports right now? Is that where
what other hockey podcast is going to celebrate the legacy of Ethan Polger, who represented the Toronto Maple Leafs and earned his first EA Sports NHL 24 title?
Yeah. That's awesome. No, I know Polgs. I've seen him play. For those that don't know, I used to be the play-by-play voice of the NHL Gaming World Championship, which preceded the current EA Sports NHL World Championship this year, obviously the NHL 24 World Championship. And it was a great gig, dude. Let me just say, it was awesome. This was, I think, 2018 it started. We did the first one and we went to Europe. Like, we went to Sweden, crowned a European champion. We went to Toronto and crowned a Canadian champion. Then we went to New York and crowned a U.S. champion. And then they all came together to crown a world champion.
Wow.
And so That was the format then. Now it's every team crowns a champion and they all come together to crown an NHL world champion with Europe still involved. But Polks has been in the scene for a very long time, and to see him get his flowers and win a world championship is awesome. So good.
Not just a world championship for Polks, $30,000 US as the grand prize, a custom hockey stick trophy. And then what I imagine is also a loot crate and probably $100 in Robux. Really good stuff.
Great job.
I make fun of gaming, but I play Fortnite every waking moment that I'm not doing this podcast.
No, because you're a boomer.
Just being silly.
Yeah. No build Fortnite because you're, aging hands.
That's right. Because Generation Gen X does not build in Fortnite. Gen X just wants to go around and snipe noobs. You know that, Arda.
Shout out to Nasher. He was the one that I would do the commentary with, and he's absolutely rocking it with his content, not just in the gaming space, but in IRL, like actual hockey content that he's doing now, whether it's roller hockey, etc. He's actually building a roller hockey arena in Columbus called Heat Wave Arena, which is like the coolest thing ever to me. That's awesome. So
wow, awesome.
Great community there. No Sleeves is the commentator there. He's great, doing great things. The NHL continues on. Let's talk about the Western Conference race. This is the wild card portion of it, obviously less interesting or less teams involved, really. I mean, the St. Louis Blues are
nobody. Let's not even
hang on by a thread.
They still have 4%
or something like that.
Calling it a race is an insult to races at this point, aren't
they? Yeah, fair enough.
These are the playoff teams. Most compelling first round matchup for me right now that's on the table has got to be VGK, the Vegas Golden Knights against the Vancouver Canucks. A lot of us were like, will it be Vancouver in LA? It looks statistically like it could be, based on some of these points projections, VGK against the Canucks. And that is going to be fascinating on several fronts. One, obviously, is what will VGK look like at that point? Who will be healthy enough to be in their lineup? Who will be playing goal for them is another question. And then the real question is, when you have a team in Vancouver that has relied on a real top-heavy lineup throughout the season, they D up well, but we know who scores the goals for them. How are they going to match up against a Golden Knights team that has showed last year that when it comes playoff time, they know how to defend anybody?
Yeah, and that first round matchup for Vegas could actually be the Oilers, because right now, as we record this, the Golden Knights have a game in hand on LA and they're only 1 point back. So Edmonton really doesn't know who they will be facing in the first round. And by the way, they're only 3 points behind Vancouver, so we could absolutely see some shuffling.
If you were Edmonton, I would ship out Connor McDavid to every Vegas Golden Knights game down the stretch, have him dress as the opponent, sneak onto the ice and do everything he can to beat the Golden Knights, because you want LA. You want LA so bad in that first round, man. You've done it before. You could do it again. The minute you see those uniforms, it's going to be sense memory for the Oilers and beating those guys. I don't think you want any part of the Golden Knights in the first round.
The underdog team that you wouldn't want to face in the first round, it's weird to say Tampa in this situation, because they're really not an underdog team if you're looking at the last several years, because they've had a long Stanley Cup final stretch and two Stanley Cup victories. But the fact that they've been hovering around the wild card for most of the season, and a lot of people actually ruled them out as even a playoff team, I suppose puts them in this category, and they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs because they know how to play in the playoffs.
Absolutely. I wouldn't want to play in the first round. I'll stay in the West for mine, because I think that even though they are right now a 3 seed, maybe all the way up to a 2 seed, I still think people are not talking about Winnipeg enough. Probably because they're Winnipeg, one, and two, because they had a bit of a stumble in the last month, but they strung together a few wins now. They got Gabe Vilardi back in the lineup. They found their offense again. And I think they're heating up at the right time. I have a hard time picking against Nathan MacKinnon in a playoff series, but they might be catching the Jets on an upswing. When the Jets are on an upswing, based on how they've played this season, when they're rolling, they could beat anybody in this league.
Yeah, I jumped to the East there. Sorry, I forgot that this was West only.
Balance it out, baby.
Wanted to be the NHL.
You're worldwide, Arda. You cover the globe. You're not just East West.
We should never besmirch the good people of Winnipeg. We're going to hear about this. You realize this, right?
I'm not besmirching anything. The people of Winnipeg know that they were forever defined by one man, Ilya Bryzgalov, who refused to play in Winnipeg because they all live underground and they have no parks.
No parks. As he famously said. No parks.
Yeah.
Projected points. What are we thinking here?
Well, the projected points right now, courtesy of Stathletes, as we do the show on this Monday, is Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg as the top three in the Central, mm-hmm. Vancouver, Edmonton, Los Angeles as the top three in the Pacific, then VGK as the first wild card, Nashville as the second wild card. So that's the points projection right now. And again, it leads to some very interesting playoff matchups indeed.
And for to that point, the only movement according to that points projection based on when we are recording right now would be VGK leapfrogging over Nashville in the wild card race. That would be the only movement. So interesting. All right. To our main event here on The Drop, it is finally time to crown the 2024 Mascot Madness champion. Every single mascot in the league had an equal opportunity to make it this far, to receive their one shining moment. It came down to the final. Even Rempe the Giant had an opportunity.
Oh, by the way, Rangers. Shout out to Larry Brooks, who apparently is a listener of The Drop, who specifically said in his column over the weekend that Matt Rempe is not a mascot. So listen, give him my history with Larry Brooks and buy me a beer one day and I'll tell you about it. I have to imagine that was a subtle dig at our very podcast, Arda.
Greg Wyshynski always looking for free alcohol. it has now come down to two. Victor E. Green of the Dallas Stars taking on Howler, definitely not a cat, of the Arizona Coyotes. Interesting paths to get here, and now they meet in the final. Victor E. Green most recently vanquished Chance the Gila Monster in a massive, colossal matchup. Howler essentially went through the entire Cats division in order to get here. Victor E. Green, I believe, also defeated Gritty along the way.
Huge upset.
Some big upsets by Victor E. Green. Now,
Before we begin, again, if you look at Howler and squint, you can see that it kind of looks like a cat. Second thing for me, though, is like part of the equation for us throughout Mascot Madness has been the energy put into winning each matchup by these mascots. What was your reaction to what you saw from the Victor E. Green contingent and the Howler contingent leading up to this championship final?
Okay, let's dive into this because this weekend has been incredible. Both mascots and, quite frankly, both social media teams, content teams, Stars and Coyotes have really bought into this.
Yeah.
And they have reached beyond their sandbox to try and get buy-in from others as well. For example, the Coyotes got the Arizona Cardinals involved. They got the UFC involved with UFC fighters having Howler train at the UFC Apex facility.
Wow.
They've really gone above and beyond to try and make the best case possible for their mascot to win the 2024 Mascot Madness Championship. We decided, in honor of the final, to extend the voting timeline. So this vote went on the entire weekend, and almost 10,000 of you voted on the champion.
Right.
The results are, Wish, 58.4% leaned Victor E. Green. So Victor E. Green won the popular vote on social media. My question to you is, with all the information presented to us, all of the effort, all of the content, all of the buy-in, the posts, the sway, the campaigns, and the vote, where do you see this championship going?
Yes, this is important to note that the popular vote is merely informational, but also a tiebreaker in case the selection committee, me and Arda, can't come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that although Howler definitely put in a lot of work, including some digital skits, I can't get past the fact that Victor E. Green not only emphatically won this vote, Arda, but also took down what I think most people consider to be the number one overall seed in this bracket, Gritty, en route to the championship. I didn't think I'd go here because I really am fond of one of these participants more than the other. But I go Victory Green for winner of Mascot Madness. What say you?
I hear everything you're saying. Very
valid
points.
I know you're on a podcast with me.
Obviously, and I have to listen to my co-host if I'm doing a podcast with him.
Do you?
Maybe some people don't. Everything you're saying is valid. I can't get over the fact that Howler and the Arizona Coyotes social and content teams stretched so wide to sway the vote, to create interest, to buy into this whole thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, they got the Cardinals involved. They got Coyotes players involved. They got UFC fighters and the UFC facility involved. They created skits. They thought of ideas. They pushed this as hard as they possibly could. They got local ABC News involved.
Yeah.
I admire that.
As do I.
So for that reason, I lean Howler. But now we find ourselves in a precarious situation, right?
Yeah.
Because you voted for Victory Green. I voted for Howler. And yeah.
I hear what you're saying. I will say, though, that for all of that effort.
Yes.
All those social media posts didn't sway the vote in Howler's favor.
That's a good point.
The will of the people was clearly here. And listen. I think we have to come to grips with something, which is that we have constructed this bracket thusly.
Mm-hmm.
The selection committee cannot come to a reasonable agreement and consensus, then the will of the people will be the tiebreaker. That is how we explained it to the voters before this all this madness started, Arda. And if you say Howler and I say Victory Green, then we throw it to the people.
Yes.
And the people, quite overwhelmingly, said Victory Green.
That's a good point that you make. For all the content and the sway that the Coyotes put out there, the people have spoken. Congratulations, Victory Green.
There he is.
You are the champion.
Congratulations, man. Victory Green, chances are most people didn't know what your name is or that you existed before this bracket started. But now look at you, a champion. Mascot Madness 2024, baby. Victory Green, congratulations. Your prize is on its way once we figure out what the prize is and if we can get a trophy.
It's going to be a hug when we go to a Dallas Stars game.
It'll be a firm handshake and an attaboy. No, we're going to send something, some level of hardware, some real life thing will be sent to you, Victor E. Green, as soon as we can figure out what that is.
And Wish will ask for a beer when he goes to American Airlines Center.
I mean, that goes without saying.
Victorious E. Green. Well done.
Wow. Look at you. You're an announcer.
It is. It has been a lot of fun. This tournament was great. I hope we do it again next year.
Oh, without question.
Here's the thing. And this, I want to make this very, very clear. Victory Green is the 2024 Mascot Madness champion. So Victory Green has these bragging rights for an entire year until we do this tournament again. And then everything is up for grabs once again.
And my solemn promise to you, the Drop listener and viewer, is that I will hire a zoologist next year to make sure that we correctly classify where the animals are supposed to go.
I don't know. Maybe Howler wants to stay in the cat division.
I mean,
because
he did pretty
cleaned
well
it out.
For himself in the cat division,
right?
Didn't he?
Howler cleaned it out.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what? I want to throw flowers to Howler and the Coyotes team. They were on board with this for the whole the entire way through. So shout out to them. Even, you know, as runner ups, they did a great job. Thank you all for listening. This was a lot of fun. We get to do it again. Of course, we do it twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well. The NHL on ESPN YouTube. Enjoy the pucks for the rest of the week, and we will catch you on Friday.
Take care.